My room was in the left wing and looked out over the park. John left me, and a few minutes later I saw him from my window walking slowly across the grass, arm in arm with Cynthia Murdoch. I heard Mrs. Inglethorpe call, "Cynthia," impatiently, and the girl started and ran back to the house. At the same moment, a man stepped out from the shadow of a tree and walked slowly in the same direction. He looked about 40, very dark, with a melancholy, clean-shaven face. Some violent emotion seemed to be mastering him. He looked up at my window as he passed, and I recognized him, though he had changed much in the 15 years that had elapsed since we last met. It was John's younger brother, Lawrence Cavendish. I wondered what it was that had brought that singular expression to his face. Then I dismissed him from my mind and returned to the contemplation of my own affairs. The evening passed pleasantly enough, and I dreamed that night of that enigmatical woman, Mary Cavendish. The next morning dawned bright and sunny, and I was full of the anticipation of a delightful visit. I did not see Mrs. Cavendish until lunchtime, when she volunteered to take me for a walk, and we spent a charming afternoon roaming in the woods, returning to the house about 5. As we entered the large hall, John beckoned us both into the smoking room. I saw at once by his face that something disturbing had occurred. We followed him in, and he shut the door after us. "Look here, Mary, there's the deuce of a mess. Evie's had a row with Alfred Inglethorpe, and she's off."
"Evie? Off?"
John nodded gloomily.
"Yes, you see, she went to the Mater, and...
Oh, here's Evie herself."
Miss Howard entered. Her lips were set grimly together, and she carried a small suitcase. She looked excited and determined, and slightly on the defensive.
"At any rate," she burst out, "I've spoken my mind."
"My dear Evelyn," cried Mrs. Cavendish, "this can't be true."
Miss Howard nodded grimly.
"True enough. Afraid I said some things to Emily she won't forget or forgive in a hurry. Don't mind if they've only sunk in a bit. Probably water off a duck's back, though. I said right out, 'You're an old woman, Emily, and there's no fool like an old fool. The man's 20 years younger than you, and don't you fool yourself as to what he married you for. Money. Well, don't let him have too much of it. Farmer Rakes had got a very pretty young wife. Just ask your Alfred how much time he spends over there.' She was very angry. Natural. I went on, 'I'm going to warn you, whether you like it or not. That man would as soon murder you in your bed as look at you. He's a bad lot. You can say what you like to me, but remember what I've told you. He's a bad lot.'"
"What did she say?" Miss Howard made an extremely expressive grimace.
"Darling Alfred, dearest Alfred, wicked calumnies, wicked lies, wicked woman, to accuse her dear husband. The sooner I left her house, the better. So I'm off."
"But not now.
This minute."
For a moment, we sat and stared at her. Finally, John Cavendish, finding his persuasions of no avail, went off to look up the trains. His wife followed him, murmuring something about persuading Mrs. Inglethorpe to think better of it. As she left the room, Miss Howard's face changed. She leant towards me eagerly.
"Mr. Hastings, you're honest. I can trust you?"
I was a little startled. She laid her hand on my arm and sank her voice to a whisper.
"Look after her, Mr. Hastings. My poor Emily. They are a lot of sharks, all of them. Oh, I know what I'm talking about. There isn't one of them that's not hard up and trying to get money out of her. I've protected her as much as I could. Now I'm out of the way, they'll impose upon her."
"Of course, Miss Howard," I said. "I'll do everything I can, but I'm sure you're excited and overwrought." She interrupted me by slowly shaking her forefinger. "Young man, trust me. I've lived in the world rather longer than you have. All I ask you is to keep your eyes open. You'll see what I mean." The throb of the motor came through the open window, and Miss Howard rose and moved to the door. John's voice sounded outside. With her hand on the handle, she turned her head over her shoulder and beckoned to me.
"Above all, Mr. Hastings, watch that devil, her husband."
There was no time for more. Miss Howard was swallowed up in an eager chorus of protests and goodbyes. The Inglethorpes did not appear. As the motor drove away, Mrs. Cavendish suddenly detached herself from the group and moved across the drive to the lawn to meet a tall, bearded man who had been evidently making for the house. The colour rose in her cheeks as she held out her hand to him. "Who is that?" I asked sharply, for instinctively I distrusted the man. "That's Dr. Bauerstein," said John shortly. "And who is Dr. Bauerstein?" "He's staying in the village, doing a rest cure, after a bad nervous breakdown. He's a London specialist. A very clever man, one of the greatest living experts on poisons, I believe." "And he's a great friend of Mary's," put in Cynthia, the irrepressible. John Cavendish frowned and changed the subject. "Come for a stroll, Hastings. This has been a most rotten business. She always had a rough tongue, but there is no stauncher friend in England than Evelyn Howard." He took the path through the plantation, and we walked down to the village through the woods, which bordered one side of the estate. As we passed through one of the gates on our way home again, a pretty young woman of gypsy type, coming in the opposite direction, bowed and smiled. "That's a pretty girl," I remarked appreciatively. John's face hardened. "That is Mrs. Raikes."
"The one that Miss Howard..."
"Exactly," said John, with rather unnecessary abruptness. I thought of the white-haired old lady in the big house, and that vivid, wicked little face that had just smiled into ours, and a vague chill of foreboding crept over me. I brushed it aside. "Stiles is really a glorious old place," I said to John. He nodded, rather gloomily. "Yes, it's a fine property. It'll be mine some day. Should be mine now by rights, if my father had only made a decent will, and then I shouldn't be so damned hard up as I am now."
"Hard up, are you?"
"My dear Hastings, I don't mind telling you that I'm at my wits' end for money."
"Couldn't your brother help you?"
"Lawrence? He's gone through every penny he ever had, publishing rotten verses in fancy bindings. No, we are an impecunious lot. My mother's always been awfully good to us, I must say. That is, up to now. Since her marriage, of course," he broke off, frowning. For the first time I felt that, with Evelyn Howard, something indefinable had gone from the atmosphere. Her presence had spelled security. Now that security was removed, and the air seemed rife with suspicion. The sinister face of Dr. Bauerstein recurred to me unpleasantly. A vague suspicion of everyone and everything filled my mind. Just for a moment, I had a premonition of approaching evil.